I'm jingling my charm bracelet. Jingle, jingle, jingle. Happy holidays. I was like, my kingdom for a jingle bell. Happy holidays, everyone. Jingle, jingle.
Yeah.
Welcome Hi, Brandon.
Holiday spectacular. Good to see you again, Chloe.
You know, it's kind of, to be honest, y'all, it's kind of an unplanned holiday spectacular in the best of ways because I put on this festive T-Rex guiding Santa's sleigh. Yes, I am Jewish. sweater today as I was teaching our MSAs, and I was looking around my house asking my boyfriend, have you seen my red obnoxious bow hat? Couldn't find it anywhere. Finally found it, thank goodness. And then I saw our guest tweeted a photo with a very similar hat. Spoiler alert, we'll be sharing this wonderful fashion back. But how you doing, Brandon? We're so close to the holidays. How? I don't understand how.
Right, because we're still in March. This is just what, the ninth month of March.
Yeah, ninth month of March. How you feeling going into this festive time of year? Doing anything festive and fun?
Ooh, I mean, feeling good. Napa County, where I live, just went into lockdown because our ICU capacity just hit whatever the threshold percentage was of available hospital beds. So great news for us today. But on the brighter side, my house is currently running all on solar power.
Whoa. Okay.
Yeah. We had solar panels installed yesterday.
That's pretty freaking cool. So like the sun is powering your home.
8 bits brought to you by the sun.
The sun. Well, this reminds me, I haven't been to Redmond in a while, but one of the things that I loved about visiting the Redmond campus, besides all the great snacks and food and coworkers that I get to see, is the they had like these, they would grow their own herbs and stuff in the food area, which I believe was also powered by the sun. So I feel like Wi-Fi powered by the sun, food powered by the sun, so many things powered by the sun. That's so cool. So how has it been? How does it feel?
I mean, you know, I feel the power surging through my veins. I'm one with Mother Nature now. No, I mean, to be honest, and this is probably the best part, is it, you don't even notice a difference. The workers came out yesterday to do the install, and obviously during that they had to cut power to the house. And then all of a sudden, as I was working on my laptop, just going off the battery charge, like all the lights came back on. I was like, oh, I guess we're online now. So it's pretty cool. I mean, I'm looking forward to seeing our electric bill. It was about $200 last month, and we should get it closer to zero. I mean, we still use natural gas. We have gas heaters and stoves and appliances. But other than that, we really shouldn't have to pay for electric anymore.
That's awesome.
Fingers crossed.
And you're saving the environment and doing all kinds of... I think what's been really cool about coming into tech and working here at Microsoft is learning from one of our fellow cloud advocates, actually, all about green tech and the stuff that Microsoft does to kind of reduce energy debt and that kind of stuff. And I think anytime I'm able to like save the planet a little bit, I feel as kids, we were always taught like turn off the lights when you leave the house. And there's like small things that you can do, but something like powering a house, that's impactful.
That's right. Yeah. As long as it's daylight, we're just, you leave all the lights on. I think the power company should pay us a little bit too if we bring in more than we consume. But who knows? We'll figure all that out in a month or so whenever that new bill comes in. I think it still has to be like officially approved and by city inspectors and all that fun stuff. But yeah, it's very exciting.
Powered by the sun. So exciting. Pretty soon you'll have your own biodynamic winery out there in Napa, Brandon, I'm sure.
We do have a compost heap. So yeah, we're going. Yeah. We're going full Mother Nature.
Well, I have some props here to share with y'all because I've been feeling particularly festive doing seasons of serverless stuff, which I talked about last time on the show. But Brandon, new challenge this week, new challenge, who dis? If you check out YouTube right now, my YouTube, you can just search the or look at aka.ms/seasons-of-serverless. We have posted the solution for the world's longest kebab. And y'all, it's one of my favorite videos that I've done because we talk, myself, Cecil, and Barish, this Microsoft student ambassador who built this project, talk about kebab ops, as in like, how do you figure out DevOps to cook and build the world's longest kebab? And literally used Azure Functions, figured out how to get all of the like proper recipe, make sure that you don't put too much pepper on it, that you're cooking the right amount. So check that out. But I didn't really realize that we were that close to the holidays. So I want to share some of my favorite holiday sweaters that didn't make it onto 8 because I didn't wear them in time. This one is one that my mom made. She used to be a designer, and it says, "Oh, Woolly Night." What could have been?
With sheep. It's a three wise sheep.
Yeah. There's also one kind that says mistletoads that has three toads on it. Ilotka, move it, move it. I am Jewish, half Jewish on my dad's side. I wore this one recently. Dinosaur situation here. Some gnomes that I did not get to wear on the show. And last but not least, my festive holiday light sweater. I don't know about y'all, but this is my first year putting up Christmas lights because I'm home. Like, I usually am traveling around the holidays. So I've got a tree. I've got Christmas lights up in the window. Pretty exciting stuff. I'm feeling more festive than usual this time of year, this year, Brandon. How about you?
Same. Yeah. And something that's really cool. I mean, we moved just a couple of miles away. We lived in San Francisco at the beginning of the year, bought a house here in Napa. And it's only about an hour's drive, but the climate here is so different. And yeah, it gets cold enough in Napa, but not really in San Francisco, to where the leaves change colors. Ooh. And so, yeah, we went through this whole fall
weather. Who knew?
Seasons. What? And yeah, we saw like these beautiful reds and yellows. And it was really cool to go hiking up in, well, say the mountains, but I guess really hills, because this is Napa Valley. So we're centered between two hills, and go hiking through the hills and just see the views of all the leaves changing. And it's chilly at night, so we had a fire pit going the other night and roasted some marshmallows. And so, yeah, for the first time in a long time, it feels like the holidays.
Yeah, I love it. I'm going to share a festive holiday thing real quick, which is Clippy Claws. No, I'm just kidding. That's just the tab that I had open. Someone tweeted at me earlier some information, Brandon, that I think is festive and important for us to understand. Did you know that there is a German version of Clippy called Karl Klammer?
No.
Because this was tweeted at me right before the stream, and I think it's important to share that Karl Klammer is the German version of Clippy. Today I learned. This is just a fun fact that I'm sharing with people.
So is it the same? Is Karl Klammer still the paperclip with the eyeballs, like the same Clippy we know and love, just different name?
I believe so. But that is a good question, because there is no image here. What if it is doing something particularly German? I don't know. We'll have to ask our friend who tweeted this at me. But I'm super excited for our guest today, Brandon.
Yes.
Because so quick side note. It is rare. On Twitter, I never like to make anybody feel stupid or talk down, or like kindness always. And I don't necessarily think that this tweet was meant maliciously. But I recently had tweeted some stuff out about being a non-traditional background engineer. And I had a comment on a tweet that brought up some very interesting conversations. Now I'll preface this by saying I am a woman online on twitter.com, and it is very rare that I will confidently quote retweet someone and tell them that they're wrong, but I believe very strongly in this, and I think our guest today does as well. So here's a tweet. Let me give a little context here. This started on a thread that I had posted earlier in the week. That was kind of a joke, but also true, that was basically saying that folks with opinions on junior engineers with non-traditional or self-taught backgrounds not belonging in tech are basically like Herbalife to me, and that they are making claims not tested or backed by data, annoying and up in my DMs all the time, demanding my attention, and toxic. As someone with a non-traditional background, this is an argument that I have to face all the time. I'm used to it. I go on and on in this thread here about, you know, the importance of how difficult it is to enter the industry and why it's important to mentor folks. But this comment stuck out to me. right here, which was on a quote retreat about this awesome person who was like, we once hired a former barista on our DevOps team. Our department always had epic coffee. And this comment just didn't sit well with me. It said, depends a bit on what tech you're talking about. When doing machine learning for cancer recognition on medical images, I am sorry, but I don't believe baristas will crack it. Now, Brandon, I'm no AI ML expert, but I have dabbled a little bit in it. And I strongly disagree with this opinion. So, and I love the responses that I've been getting on this tweet. There's some really, really cool comments from people saying like, hey, former professional bass player, former, like really, really cool stories here. We have a Rabbi Michael Cohen here, chiming in the comments. Some really cool discussions happening here. And I thought that the timing on this tweet was really fun and interesting because we have a really amazing guest today, who, oh my goodness, where do we begin, Brandon? Where do we begin? We're gonna let them introduce themselves. But this person has been at Microsoft 23 years, if you can believe, has seen it all, has worked on many, many different teams, done different things. Brandon, what you lead us in. You lead, help me. How do I introduce this person? So many things to say.
Just one of the best people at the company. He's, like you said, he's been here 23 years. He has this amazing background, amazing story, which we'll get to share with everybody in the world today, and just couldn't be a kinder human. So thanks so much for coming on the show. Carmen!
Hey. Hi, everyone.
Charm bracelet jingle bells for every guest today.
I'm fidgeting like I always do. Like I just pick up things around the house and I have like an extension cord and I'm fidgeting here. So I don't have a jangle bracelet, but I can wear it like one.
Oh, I've got a squishy stress spread here. Right there with you. Carmen, we have a lot we're going to talk about today. Obviously, we'll get to this tool stuff in a second. But for folks joining us at home, we'll go through your entire This Is Your Life journey on how you got to where you're at today at Microsoft. But tell the lovely folks at home who you are and what you do.
Sure. My name is Carmen Crincoli. I am a senior program manager in the Azure division. I actually work on our on-prem hybrid solutions. So I do customer-facing engineering engagement for Azure Stack HCI and AKS on Azure Stack HCI and a bunch of our other on-prem OS work, the hybrid work. And I've kind of been in the Windows side of Microsoft since I started. I kind of love Windows.
First of all, amazing hat.
We did not coordinate
this at all. I have a question for you.
Full credit to my wife on this. She got the fascinator for our dogs, and I'm like, that's mine now.
I love it. It's perfect. I love how it stands straight up. So question for you. If you had talked to yourself, let's see, when was this? Back in 96, 97, maybe a month or two before you worked at Microsoft, and you told yourself then, yo, this is going to be your job. I'm from the future. Believe me. Would you have believed Carmen?
Oh my God. Gosh, no. I mean, I wouldn't have believed myself after I'd been at Microsoft for several years already. I feel like the idea of like a lifetime career at one company was dead before I ever even got into the workforce. Right. Like, you know, by the early 90s, you know, the only people who worked all their lives at one place were like people who worked for like GE and IBM, and they stopped doing that. Right. So, you know, typical Gen X, you know, entering the workforce and, you know, looking at the prospect of, okay, well, you're just going to career hop. No one has a lifetime career. And that was true even years after I joined the company. I felt like, you know what, if I can make it to 5 years, I can, you know, turn 5 years at Microsoft into a career anywhere else. And I don't have to worry about my credentials because my credentials will be, well, I spent 5 years at Microsoft. Sure. So to be, you know, almost 25 years is like, yeah, I just wouldn't have even imagined it.
Yeah. And what a journey it's been. So let's start at the beginning.
We gotta go back.
In the time machine. We gotta go back, Marty.
The beginning is the fun part.
Right. So let's go to like the month before you worked at Microsoft. What were you doing that?
I was literally working at a gas station in New Jersey, pumping gas, because in New Jersey, Every gas station is full service. You're not allowed to pump your own gas. So it's a legitimate job. And studying for MCSE exams and hanging out at night on IRC, chatting with my friends about hockey. and wondering what I was going to do in the future. Like, I was messing with computers because I love computers since I was a kid, but like, I didn't legitimately didn't know that I'd have a career because I wasn't in college. I wasn't going to college, and I didn't think you could get into computers as a career without a CS degree or something, you know, programming. And IT wasn't really a career at that point. Like, it was just really kind of starting up. So I just didn't have the concept of, you know, how I would be in computers without a degree. And I wasn't like dying to go to college or anything. So I was just messing with computers and, you know, pumping gas and, you know, hanging out with friends. And one of my friends at IRC, who, you know, was there to talk about hockey, not computers, was like, hey, I work for Microsoft and you have some exams that even folks here don't have. Would you be interested in interviewing and, you know, would you work at Microsoft? And I'm like, I pump gas at a gas station. Of course I would like to work for Microsoft. Like, yes, of course I would. Like, please, if you can get me an interview, like, oh my God, that would be amazing. It never in a million years occurred to me it would actually happen. How wishful do you have to be, right? So, but that's, you know, that's kind of where the journey started.
Ah. Yeah. And you mentioned, I already dropped my memory of the acronym. What was the, you mentioned you were doing some certification tests. Was it MCSE?
Yeah. The Microsoft Certified Systems Engineer. So it's like the higher level of the certified professional program. You had to, at the time, this was NT4 era, you had to have six different MCP exams from a, you know, a slate of like 12 or 14 or whatever. So I'd taken the six of them, which was not insignificant because the test costs money. So, you know, and then failing them, you know, costs you more money. Right. So, so I took those on my own and, I'd gotten the exam and I, most critically, the one that sticks out in my mind is I got the TCP/IP. I passed the TCP/IP test, which was a notoriously difficult exam in that era. People really struggled with that one, even inside of tech support at Microsoft. So when I came in and I interviewed, I literally had like three of the different interviewers being like, I haven't passed that one yet. That's pretty good.
Like, here's my job.
Yeah.
I love that. So like literally you... So this is so interesting too, because I should have shared this earlier, Brandon. Oh my gosh, I forgot to share this. I've started this new show, Cameron, called The Show Must Go Off, parentheses, The Air. And the whole point is to get our friend PJ a job in Stealth Relations. And we went through a job description side by kind of being like, okay, what are the gaps that we need to fill in PJ's education? He's a high school teacher who teaches English. What do we need to fill in here? And we went through a job description from, I believe, one from Airtable, one from Notion, and he had all the skills on each bullet point. Like, we were fully expecting, like, okay, surely there must be something here. And of course there was one that said, you know, 4 years and 4+ years in technology, but even I don't think I filled that. And it was a role that I had been reached out for. So I think that's really important to note to anybody out there who's making a career transition or maybe sees a job description and doesn't check off all the boxes, that oftentimes we're way more qualified than we think we are for different roles. Or we don't even know that those roles exist out there. Like, I certainly didn't know developer advocacy was a thing 5 years ago, and here I am.
And I found even on top of that, when companies post the job openings, they're kind of posting their wish list, their stretch goals. And I've met a lot of people who won't even apply for a job because they look at the, well, put in quotes, requirements and say, oh, I don't even qualify for that. This person, they need somebody with 5 years experience and I only have two. And it's like, no, just go for it. And I mean, in reality, like, what is the difference between 5 years and 2 years? Is it really going to make or break? Like, you either know it or you don't. And so, yeah, don't also feel discouraged if you don't fit everything, because chances are you're totally qualified for the job. They're just kind of putting their dream candidate out there who probably doesn't even exist.
And I love it, Carmen, you were the dream candidate. And like, I feel like had you not, it's one of those happenstance things, right? Right place, right time. You knew this person on the IRC channel, but imagine the path not taken. Like, yep. It's all kind of based on circumstance. And I think that's such a wonderful example of how folks with different backgrounds can bring value.
And that was very much true of Microsoft tech support in that era in particular. Like, so many of the people in tech support in Redmond that's where I started, are still with the company now, 23 odd years later, like people who were there before me, people who I helped hire in the ensuing few years, still with the company now. And all of them had the same kind of background. Like, Microsoft was absolutely willing to give you a full-time job if you could do the technical requirements of the job and your credentials didn't matter so much as, one, you had the customer service skills to actually do what you needed to do as a tech support person. And two, you could learn well, right? Like, you got a trial period, and if you adapted well and you learned the two technologies and a new release came along, you did well, you proved yourself and that you got a job. And two of my absolute best friends in the entire world are with the company almost as long as me, like, you know, within a year or two. The same story. They don't have degrees. They've advanced through the ranks. They are, you know, led projects. They are, you know, senior developers. But that's the career that Microsoft let me into. It's one of the reasons I've stayed as long as I have. I have a tremendous amount of loyalty to the company for giving me these opportunities. And then the second my foot was in the door and I proved myself, there is no question of your, like, credentials. Like, no one looks backwards anymore. They're like, yeah, who cares what you're learning, none of it mattered. It's like, oh, you did that project? Great, I want you on my team. And, you know, you never had to think about it ever again. You're in.
I'm so glad that's the case, because if some of my hiring managers saw the weird theater classes I had to take, they may rethink.
And also in the comments here on Learn TV. So if you're not joining us on Learn TV yet, you can go to aka.ms/learnTV. But Christopher Terry shared with us that he did DevOps for about 5 years before he even knew the word DevOps. And sometimes you're already doing the job, you just don't necessarily know the buzzword yet. So,
yes.
So
I hear this, Chris, a lot about DevRel. Like, I feel like a lot of folks who end up working in developer relations are like, oh, I woke up one day and I realized I was doing a lot of community work and decided to do this. So yeah, could not agree more. I love this comment. When you don't have a degree, but you know the stuff, I think it shows you don't need to be led by the hand to accomplish things. Could not agree more. I think that's such a great, great comment there. So let's talk about Microsoft back in the day. So what was it like to be a technical support person back in the day at Microsoft? I imagine we're not doing email support. I imagine we're probably doing phone support.
Yep. I was hired literally to answer the phones. Part of my initial round of training was, like, you know, how to manage, like, the signing into the queues and taking calls. And I was hired literally for end user support. This wasn't like premier support supporting enterprises. Like, I took calls from, you know, anyone who dialed the 800 number to get support from Microsoft for Windows 95. I was literally hired for the Internet Explorer 4 launch and then in preparation for Windows 98. IE4 was not a fun launch. Active desktop broke everything. If there are anyone who remembers all the way back then. Sign into the queue, take phone calls. Part of what had us have this conversation, you invite me on, was I posted a story from one of my very early days where I answered the phone and I literally got a call from a Baptist minister in Alabama who started off the call by saying he wanted to complain that Microsoft was promoting the occult. And I was like, what do you mean? He's like, well, you use wizards everywhere. And as a reflex, right, I laughed because I thought he was messing with me and he was going to say, you know, my system won't boot or my start button disappeared, right? Like the calls that happened on frontline support. And he got really quiet. He got upset. he was like, I'm really serious. Like, you know, wizards are promoting the occult. And I just had to sit there and let him lecture me about, you know, about these things. And I promised to take that feedback to the engineers who were responsible for it. And I mean, I did what was required of me there, but like, you know, it's one of like 1,000 stories when you're taking end user support, particularly for someone like Microsoft, right? Like we had users just all walks of life. Just everyone used Windows 95 at that era. There was, that was the technology, right? So you got all kinds of interesting, fascinating experiences. Although I didn't actually stay on the phone lines for long because my managers quickly recognized that I'm pretty even keeled. And they're like, okay. And I was pretty good at what I was doing. They're like, okay, you're doing well enough now. We need people to take escalations and we need people to handle upset customers. So they assigned me the angry customer escalations. So my job for the launches of these products was to take the people who like called up screaming and we'd promise to call them back and then they would send them to me and I had to call back the screaming person.
So oh, no. In my line of work.
and that was considered a promotion, as a matter of fact.
That's so funny that you say that, Carmen, because in my previous life, pre-engineering, I actually worked as a customer support representative at Kixi, the gaming company, which was a rival to Zynga and all those Farmville games. And I got a promotion to VIP customer support, which was dealing with what we call in the industry whales, which is anybody who spends $30,000 and above on a game. And I think, and we did email support. So I bow to you as someone who's on phone support, like you don't have to do as much acting when you're doing an email. Luckily, you can do a lot more pre-formatted responses. But I did learn so much before I even knew what engineering was, how important it is to empathize with the customer, to speak with the customer, to relay that information to engineers. I didn't even know what the engineers did, but I knew it was important that that information got to them. And yep. I wish everyone in engineering had to work in customer support for like a year. I think it should be part of the 4-year degree for computer science if people are going to be so stingy about having this degree.
I agree. I think there's no better experience than having to work with a customer and just learning how to do that empathy part, because your life in support gets a lot easier if you are truly empathetic to the customer and then also at the same time communicate your needs back, right? Like, you know, you can understand why someone's upset and let them be upset and then be like, okay, but this is what we need to do to fix things for you. And, you know, this is just what we're going to have to do. Like I'm not saying it's easy. It's a very difficult thing to do. And it's very draining when you're dealing with very upset people, but it's such an important thing in your career. And you know, honestly, it translates into a lot of other scenarios, right? Like taking that customer skill and translating it into a pissed off VP. Like it's good for your career. Learn how to do it. It translates outside of just customers, but also your coworkers and getting the results you want in a workplace environment.
Yeah,
definitely. And just to round out the trifecta, my first real job in tech was also working in customer support lines. I did.
Yeah.
You know, working in IT, it was actually at for Walt Disney World. So their IT company, and yeah, just fielding tickets all day. And nobody really calls IT tech support with good news, and so you're just basically you're just getting yelled at all the time and told like the website's so bad, you guys don't know how to do your jobs. And I will say my biggest takeaway, adding into everything we've said so far, is also it taught me not to make assumptions or jump to conclusions, because. Yeah. Everybody uses words differently, and you know, somebody might say, might be describing what's happening, and I'm interpreting it, and I'm totally getting it wrong. And so one of the problems I had was, essentially jumping to a conclusion that, oh, I know exactly what you're talking about, I know exactly how to fix it, and then we start going down, working on the fix together. Maybe they're sharing their screen. Maybe I'm remoted into their desktop, and all of a sudden they're like, "What? Why are you there? Like, why are you in Internet Explorer? The problem's in the File Explorer." I was like, "Oh, I should have asked a couple more questions. And it's honestly still something I struggle with today, especially when everything's just typed out. You know, if you're answering GitHub issues or emailing with folks, just to really drill down into it, I like to take a lot of screenshots now. Like, if ever I'm putting together a workshop, yes, it's always a line of text that says, do this, this, and this, and then a screenshot with boxes and arrows, like, click this button right here. And so there's no mixing communications. And yeah, I totally agree that if every engineer had to work in tech support, customer support, the tech world would be a lot better place, a lot more empathetic, at least.
and you did identify, actually. Oh, I'm sorry, Chloe.
No, go ahead.
You did just identify a thing that I don't think about anymore, but is what made that support experience so challenging, which is it was 1997. Most of the computers in the world weren't on the internet. And even if they were, there was no such thing as screen sharing. You could only do troubleshooting by relying on the person on the other end of a telephone line accurately describing what the problem was. So you had to be very good at descriptive language to get people to the steps that they needed to do. You had to spell everything out. You had to describe exactly on the screen where things were. Like, it really did force you into a place of taking a visual thing and turning them into abstract words that other people could understand and follow the directions of very well, which is one of the challenges of it. Like, someone who can only work visually would have a very difficult time with phone support for that reason.
I literally do this with my father. I literally have
with parents.
A screenshot here of trying to figure out. It's so funny that you mentioned that story earlier, Brandon, because I was on the phone with my dad last week, and he was like, there's this blue thing and it says charts and it's in the way. And I'm trying to debug this thing for my dad. And the whole time I'm thinking it's in like Edge or something, or Chrome or a browser or Safari. And it was a Word doc. I was trying to debug, like, you asking the right questions, being able to say like, okay, so what is your issue? What are you looking at? Like, I empathize. Oh my goodness. Not being able to screen share. It's truly an art to figure out what the actual issue is. But I have a question for you, Brandon, that'll segue us into a question I definitely want to ask her. So I was recently on hold with Disneyland because I had to get a refund on a ticket, and they had some bangers playing on the hold music. April can attest to this because she also had to call this number, and they were playing Chippendale Rescue Rangers. They were playing some good hits on this channel. Now, Brandon, did you have cool hold music when you worked in phone support? Which segues us into a very important question for Cameron, which is, tell us about phone support. But first you, Brandon.
Yeah, I have no idea. I don't think I ever called tech support. I just answered the phone on the other end. Or because I was in it, I could just go to the next cubicle and be like, hey, Phil, how do I do this?
Because their music slaps, truly. Just like, if you're looking for a good playlist and you're just like, I don't know what to listen to while I code, just call Disney and ask to be put on hold, truly.
No, just put me back on hold, please. Put me on hold.
But Carmen, and I should also say, it's a diverse set of music. We're talking Mulan, we're talking 80s Chippendale Rescue Rangers, we're talking the whole gamut here. So Carmen, I have heard some tales about what it was like to be on hold during this time. Tell us a little bit about this special time.
Yeah, there was an actual job at Microsoft in phone support in the 90s. Like, I think it only stopped in the early 2000s even, called the queue jockey, like a line, like queue, waiting queue. And the queue jockey's job during busy periods when phone support, lines were really long, was to play music for the people on hold. And then, you know, in between songs, get on and tell people about the wait times for the different queues. Like, you know, if you're waiting for, you know, word support, there's currently an 18-minute wait with 6 people in the queue, right? That kind of thing. And they would literally broadcast to everyone on hold throughout the Microsoft support system. And it was an actual job. And there was an actual broadcast booth in one of the offices in the support buildings here in Redmond that did it for all of our support lines. Like, you know, we have support centers in Charlotte, North Carolina, and Las Colinas in Texas. And there were some outsourcing places, but everyone was tied into the same global support queue. So the queue jockey would spin music and get on hold and tell stories and talk to people. And it was just part of your hold experience to try and make sure people like didn't just have the Muzak experience of, you know, waiting on hold and listening to generic music. And it was there. It was, you know, you could walk in. It was just like it looked like any other office from the outside. And then you walked in and there was just like a full broadcast booth in one of the generic Microsoft offices in one of our buildings. And they actually hired like actual DJs from local radio stations to do that, right? Like they brought them in as like, you know, this temporary queue jockeys under contract, and they were there for a few hours. It was typically only around launches when it was necessary or really better busy times of the day. It wasn't like 24/7, 365. But yeah, there you go. You got one of the articles.
I love this quote that says, Microsoft says 80% of calls are answered in less than 1 minute, but for those who must wait longer, some waits have been as long as 20 minutes. Oh, Microsoft turns to queue jockey to keep the masses patient. When they aren't making traffic reports, QJs fill the phone lines with music that QJs ranges from soul to pop to rhythm and blues and light pop, but they do have their limits. No AC/DC. I love this. Oh my gosh. First of all, we got to bring this back.
Hashtag bring back the cue jockey.
I know a lot of people who would be fighting for that job.
We already have folks. Haney in the comments said, I would be great at that. Michael. He says, yeah, bring it back. Like, why don't we have a queue jockey anymore?
Yeah, I want to call Microsoft support right now and see what the queue hold music is. I might do this at some point during the But truly, anybody out there hiring for that team, Brandon and I are available. This is our demo reel is this show.
I mean, that would be great, right? Like, legitimately, that would be fantastic, right? Because people would get to be, like, entertained and maybe learn some interesting things about technology. It's something interesting to listen to other than just, like, you know, Muzak, right? Like, that's a fantastic idea, frankly.
We should pivot, y'all. This is our new team at Microsoft.
Or you could even outsource it. Like you could have a queue jockey company that does the hold music for all these other companies. And yeah, as long as it's good, just entertain the folks. Maybe do quizzes, maybe do like polls. This would revolutionize the game. I would want to call customer support now. Like,
and you could give an aka.ms link and be like, if you want to watch live, go hashtag bring back queue jockey. Hashtag bring it back. I love this comment in our chat here. That's crazy. I DJed in the early rave scene, so I thought I knew a lot about DJs. Never heard of that job. And oh my God, that sounds like the best daytime office job. Yes. Like this is peak best office job. Couldn't agree more.
I talked to one of the queue jockeys, like this is right when I started. They're like, they literally said like, you know, it's a great way to spend like a 3 o'clock on a Tuesday, right? Like, you know, if you have like, you know, a morning shift or a late night shift as a DJ, right? Like coming in and just kind of spinning music and chatting with people and reading off some hold times, they legitimately loved what they were doing.
Yeah. Are you a DJ? No, bro. I'm a QJ. I love that. Making shirts. Hashtag bring back the queue jockey shirts will be in the non-existent merch store tonight. let's get into the rest of your career here at Microsoft, because obviously you didn't stay in support. First question before we leave this time in your life at Microsoft, what are some of your favorite more obscure, maybe bizarre products that you had to support? Any fun tales?
The one that I always think of when they ask about the strangest thing is absolutely the Barney Actimates doll.
Yeah.
And if for anyone who doesn't know, the Barney Actimates doll was basically like an animatronic doll, like think like Teddy Ruxpin or like one of those old things, except it actually interacted with software that installed on your Windows 95 machine. And the software actually included a virtual device driver, which means it would occasionally cause things like blue screens, which, you know, if you remember the Windows 95 era, not uncommon thing. And because of that, like we didn't just hand it off to regular like consumer support where you'd do things. Some of them would come into the operating systems team. And because that was one of the things I did, I would have to take a Barney Activates call because, you know, literally one of my impressions, right? Because I had to work Christmas Day 1997 in the phone queues because I was new, right? Like I'd only been at the company for a few months. So you get assigned that duty. So everyone's going in under their Christmas tree and kids are opening things up and they're installing the Barney Activate software and it's blue screening their computer and they're calling tech support, right? So that was my Christmas Day 1997 was taking Barney calls for even though like I was like, you know, I had certifications for Windows NT on TCP/IP and I'm like, yep, unplug Barney now. Okay, unplug Barney and reboot. Let's go into safe mode.
Oh my gosh. I remember this display in Toys R Us. I truly remember Barney. I wish there was a Barbie Activates. Barney Activates.
Bring it back.
Bring it back. I think I saw, which is like, bring back Barney Activates, bring back. I knew about the existence of Barney Activates from a video, I think, of Larry Osterman that Misty did. But I recently saw on Twitter, I think it was on the tweet thread that we were on, where someone said that the Barney had, that they had set the alarm for the night and they were all going home. But then one of the Activates Barney came to life and they had to go back and reset the burglar alarm at HQ, which I just love when any toy activates an alarm. It's very toy-y for me.
Because I think the Barney had like light sensors, so you could play like a peekaboo game with it if you covered its eyes. So turning off the office lights, like could active like putting it into the dark could like activate the peekaboo.
Oh no!
Terrifying, absolutely terrifying. Okay, but where did you go? How did you get from point A to point B? Let's go through this middle part here, from working the phones to what you do now. How did we get this jump here, Carmen?
I mean, it's just that's sort of the nature of working at Microsoft is you can kind of go do the things you're interested in doing, right? So I took my support and then I went into enterprise support and then I kind of got assigned to work with some hardware companies and I came back and I did escalations with partners for a while. And then I was like, I just wanted to change. I wanted to like, you know, move my career along. And I felt like not support was a dead end for me, but like I'd been doing it for almost 10 years at that point, right? Like that was, I'd already had a significant amount of time and I was like, let me go do something different. And I actually moved into sales and I stayed at the company, but I moved into sales and moved back to the East Coast for several years and worked in technical sales on the East Coast for a while. And then I was like, okay, I'm pretty good at sales, but also I don't like it. It's not my personality. It didn't feel as good as doing engineering to me, like, you know, day to day, even though I was quite successful at it. So I flipped over and it's like, okay, I want to go back into engineering. And I took an engineering job and it gave me the opportunity to move back to Seattle and, you know, hopped around different roles here. It's just one of the things that has kept me from even investigating leaving the company is you don't have to if you don't want to. Like if you want to go to a different job or a different role, all you have to do is brush up on it, get to know some people in that group, wait for the job opportunities to come up and start interviewing for them. And chances are good if you know, actually you're doing the work and learning the things that you need, they're going to be interested in you for one of their roles eventually, because you will know how Microsoft works. You will know their space. They will recognize you. You just have so many opportunities to jump roles. I know so many people who, you know, have gone from support into Xbox, into Office, into Surface. Like you can just jump to a different role as long as you, you know, have some of the relevant knowledge that the job needs. So it's just, it feels like endless opportunity here. I've really had no, you know, deep desire to go somewhere else for the most part.
Yeah. And that is kind of like the magic of a company that does so many things, I would imagine. Like a giant company, that's what is always fascinating to me when I have folks reach out to me and they say, hey, I'd love to work at Microsoft. I go, great. What team? It's like, can you refer me to Microsoft? Yes. What do you like? What do you work on? What technology do you use? Do you like Xbox? Do you like LinkedIn? Do you like GitHub? Do you like, there's so many different flavors and varieties. And what I love to see here internally at Microsoft is folks totally switch career paths. Like, we have people who are always joining our team or going to other teams and exploring different opportunities. But that's kind of the beauty of tech, right? Like, yep. So many different avenues to explore.
I mean, I even know people who've gone from being, you know, admin assistants to being program managers, right? Like, the point is once you're in and you can start demonstrating the skills and you've shown interest in learning it, you have the opportunity to prove it and get a job and move paths. So, like, you know, you can be a PM in one part of your career and a dev in another and a salesperson in another, and you just don't have to leave. No one's going to shoehorn you and say, listen, your last 5 years have been a dev. I'm not convinced that you can do another role. That's never the way it's worked here in all my time.
Ah.
Yeah. Something that I really enjoy is if you spot a problem or if you spot a gap that exists and you know how to fix it, you can just go do it. And mm-hmm. So there's a lot of companies I've worked at where I'll point this out and say, hey, you know, we really need somebody to do this, or there's a gap in, we don't have a post-sales customer support or something like that. And they've been like, yep, you're right. We should hire for that. We should open up a job role. And then maybe 6 months later, they get somebody. And that's even if you've convinced them to do all that overhead. Most of the time, they'll just ignore it. But yeah, at Microsoft, if I go to my manager and say, hey, there's this cool opportunity right here, I think we can make this better by doing X, Y, and Z, he'll just say, okay, great. Yeah, go do it and let me know how it goes. And you have that. We get that freedom to explore a bit that I haven't really found with too many other companies.
A complementary part to that too, and that's always been true. You know, it's not universal because it's individual by individual, but it's pretty true. Is Microsoft is very good about, you're using any Microsoft technology, you can go figure out who's making that technology and ask them questions about it, and they will probably answer you in most scenarios. But there's never a scenario where, I know it's true in many other companies, where you're told, like, listen, you don't work on that, stay in your lane.
Yeah.
Don't bother me about the bug that you found. Whereas at Microsoft, like, this has been all my time here. Like, if I am using some random thing, I will go into the global address list in Outlook, and I will go find a distribution list that seems like to have a likely name. And I'd be like, hey, who owns this feature? Because it's driving me crazy and it's broken. And they're like, well, you know, and I'm like, no, who owns it, right? Like, I'm a user. I'm also at the company. You need to engage with me. You can't just ignore me. Like, if you have a different channel for it, great. But, like, you don't get to ignore a user and a fellow employee trying to make your product better. And it's always gone well. Like, it's very rare that you will get someone be like, listen, don't bother me. Like, it's just not the way it works here. The openness internally is really great. And one of the things that I'm very happy with since Satya took over is that we've been extending that externally as well, right? The ability to feel, make our customers feel like they can engage with us about our products in a meaningful fashion, and, you know, openness standpoint is really, really fantastic.
So I have a question for y'all, and I promise this has a point. Do either of you know the story of how Flamin' Hot Cheetos came to be a thing? Yes?
I do. Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to educate everyone on the stream because I recently learned this story from a coworker. Shout out to Tim. So I'm going to share my screen. So the story of Flamin' Hot Cheetos reminds me a lot of the conversation that we're having today, because the origin story for Flamin' Hot Cheetos literally came from a janitor who heard a call to action from the CEO of, what would it be, Frito-Lay? Here, I'll share it. I just learned by searching this that Eva Longoria is making a movie of this. here we go.
A biopic.
But yeah, this really awesome dude, Richard Montañez, this isn't a great image here. They're making a movie. He was a janitor at Frito-Lay and he did an experiment with chili powder. And he literally, it's a fascinating story. I highly, highly recommend that folks read it in detail because I will not do it justice. But essentially, the CEO put out a call to action that said, we want inventive, new, cool, interesting things. And he called him up and the story goes on from there. So the amount of impact that you have doesn't matter your level of experience, your level in the company, anybody can have a good idea. And super glad that that janitor piped up because I love flaming hot Cheetos. And I think this is such a full circle moment because there was a trash tweet that I quote retweeted that said junior engineers should have to be code janitors. And I strongly disagree with that. I think that junior engineers should not have to clean up the messes of more senior engineers. And janitors are very impactful, smart people. So don't talk that way about junior engineers, everyone. But I think it just goes to show, like, truly, the what you do before X, whatever that career is, making Flamin' Hot Cheetos, working at Microsoft, totally doable.
And I think, if I remember correctly, he's now a VP.
Yes.
So he stormed through the ranks, didn't just give away the idea and continue on with his janitorial day job. He took the idea, he ran with it, and I think it's their most popular flavor. It's definitely the most popular flavor for Cheetos.
I mean, look at this gif.
It's Cheetos raining down on top of him.
Amazing. But literally, everyone, I highly recommend checking this out. I'll drop it in the chat. But it is a really amazing story about how a very simple idea. I think he had never given a presentation before when he presented this to the Frito-Lay board, and he had his wife, you know, zip up all these baggies. So, like, things are achievable, like, truly. Like, so he called the CEO. I love this conversation. Who is this? What division are you with? And you're overseeing California. No, I work at the plant. No, I'm the janitor. Like, anybody can do it. This could be you.
Yeah, we even have in the comments, Hani Salam says, I'm currently a truck driver. 9 months ago, I decided to change careers, and they are self-learning Azure, AWS, and GCP.
That's amazing. Awesome. Oh my gosh. Welcome. That's so cool. Share some projects with us. We'd love to hear what you're building. One of my favorite Broadway actors was a truck driver. Like, used to sing in the truck and was discovered as a truck driver. One of the stars of the original Broadway cast of Lil Abner. Fun fact.
One of the things that I'm pretty passionate about, I talk about this a lot internally in particular, where we're talking about like hiring and diversity, right, is I recognize that my story wouldn't be applicable for a lot of people, right? Like, I got that opportunity because I fit the mold of someone who they would hire, right? Like, sure, I didn't have a college degree and I worked at a gas station, but I was like, you know, a young white dude who knew some stuff about computers and was friends with another white dude who worked there. And the chance that was taken on me, right, has paid off for the company. But it's not the one that most companies would make for someone who did not look like me. And the opportunities that we miss out on to hire people with brilliant ideas because of that kind of unexamined bias is just tremendous, right? Like, just so many smart people don't even get the foot in the door to take that kind of opportunity to land a job uncredentialed. You know, if you're a minority or you're a woman, you have to work so much harder to credential yourself up to even get your foot in the door to get those opportunities to interview. And it's just so much wasted brain power that you don't hire when you have that kind of attitude.
The amount of times that I've been filtered by recruiting software, whew.
Right.
And then I run into the team later, back in the before times at a booth, and they say, apply to our role. And I'm like, I did.
Right.
Yeah. It's an industry built by people for people who've been educated a certain way. And it makes us so happy when we see folks like yourself, Carmen, Brandon, a great ally with the CS degree, will let you into our cool people club. But I tweeted this other day, like, open a door for someone who this is harder for, because it certainly was very, very difficult for me. You know, we're trying to open that door with PJ now to get him to join our special club. But I think, you know, any way that you can help someone who doesn't look, act, sound like you get into this industry, mentor, share information, please, please, please. We love to see it. Amazing. Well, we have about five-ish minutes left, Carmen. First of all, where can people find you on the interwebs? Where should they go check out all your awesome stuff that you're doing and sharing?
I mean, I spend most of my social media time on Twitter. You got my handle down there. It's my full name, Carmen Crinkoli. It'd be warned, I'm not, like, that's not my work account. I mean, I talk about computers a lot because I've spent half my life at Microsoft, right? Like, I literally have nothing to talk about if I didn't talk about computers occasionally. but most of the time I am there, you know, being myself and sharing the things that I care about. And, you know, largely that's my dogs.
Following today, I was like, this dog, how was I not giving a follow? We have to ask the most important question of this show, which we ask everyone on the show for no particular reason other than it just always comes up. Favorite theme park and ride, Carmen?
I have not theme parked in so long.
Personally, I am an ET's Adventure, anything flying. Brandon's your coaster guy, I think. Ooh, yes.
I do love roller coasters, although I think I love the interactive rides more. So I would say Buzz Lightyear game at Disney where you shoot the targets and you get a midway different score every thing. Time. Yeah.
I think if I had to name a park, it would be Six Flags Great Adventure, just because that's where all of my childhood memories are in New Jersey, right? Like, that's just where we would go when we had a free weekend or a day off or something.
Isn't that where they filmed the intro to Step by Step? Don't they have like a wooden coaster there? I think that's true. I will Google.
Yeah, there's a wooden coaster there. I don't know if that's where they filmed that though, but that would make sense. Although my favorite stories are of Action Park, which you know, is now becoming famous again.
To watch that.
Class Action Park, or. Yeah. Yes, you should watch it. It is tremendous. It is very difficult for me to emphasize how incredibly accurate everything everyone says about the attitude everyone had about Action Park in New Jersey at the time. Like, it was just, that is New Jersey in the 80s and 90s. If you could ever wonder what it was like, watch that documentary.
Brandon, have you watched this?
I have no clue.
I think we need to do a viewing together.
That'd be great. Is it, or a live viewing. Some like Coney Island vibes, like back in the day, Coney Island?
No. Think like Lord of the Flies with water slides.
Oh.
Okay.
Wow. Now I definitely have to watch this.
I mean, there's a reason that they titled the documentary Class Action Park.
I was wondering about that.
Right.
It's like, does that mean the lawsuit? Or
lots of them, you know, the multiple deaths. It was a unique time in America.
Well, details soon on my Twitch about Brandon and I live watching that.
Oh, that's fantastic. I will be so excited for that.
You could be a guest, Carmen.
Oh, great. Bring you on, Carmen.
Oh, I give you firsthand anecdotes.
Oh my
That's
gosh.
That's right.
Stay tuned for that content. Super, super excited. Thank you again, Carmen, for joining us today. Let's see. This is our last one before the holidays, Brandon. How do we end on, like, we got to end suspensefully so people will come back and watch us come January. Let's see. Let's give them a teaser. What can people expect in 2021?
Ooh. I mean, more amazing guests. Who knows? Maybe we'll have a QJ. Hashtag bring back the QJ. You'll just have to come back and find out.
Yeah. Maybe, I don't know, maybe Clippy will be a guest. Who knows? You'll have to tune in. We've said too much. But thank you all again for joining, and we'll see you in January.